Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehr. Today we'll be talking about One World Trade Center architect Daniel Libeskind and the tower reaching its planned height of 1,776 feet. We'll also speak with New York Times reporter Stephen Greenhouse about ethical garment manufacturing practices in the wake of the building collapse in Bangladesh. Plus, we'll talk to the artist JR about his project in Times Square called Inside Out. And we're kicking off a new series where we'll discuss one of the day's obituaries in the Times. We're also going to ask you to pause and think about what WNYC adds to your life, what you get from having Brian Lehr in your ear almost every day, and ask you to support that work because we're in this spring fundraising drive. The phone number to call is 888-376-9692, or you can go to WNYC.org. Check out all the thank you gifts we have there. But it's most important that you just think about WNYC, think about what it adds to your life, and think about joining in and participating and helping us pay the bills here. But we want to start today with the breaking news that the Associated Press has been the target of a secret investigation by the Justice Department that included the seizure of 2 months of phone records from last year. The timing suggests that they're attempting to identify the government source for an article from last year about counterterrorism efforts in Yemen. I'm joined now by Caroline Little. She's the president and CEO of the Newspaper Association of America, and she can help explain what this case means for journalism. Caroline, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
I want to first get your reaction to when this news broke yesterday. What did you think when you heard about the scope of the Justice Department's, you know, phone records dig in Associated Press, you know, journalism gathering?
Frankly, I was just shocked. The actions that the Justice Department took here violate their very own rules regarding subpoenas of the news media for testimony and evidence. The rules provide that these were established in 1972. They were amended in 1980 to cover phone records. They are required to be, these subpoenas are required to be narrow in scope. They need to seek information from alternative sources. There's an obligation to inform and negotiate with the news association, in this case, the Associated Press, and it requires the Attorney General's approval. And it would appear that none of this was followed.
So the AP says that the Justice Department collected information on around 20 phone lines and 100 reporters, not only from their press gallery in the House of Representatives, but also personal and office numbers in New York, Washington, and Hartford, Connecticut. Do you know of anything, any similar scope, anything that, that approaches that kind of scope?
You know, not... Not since I've been in this business, which is, you know, over 25 years. I mean, it is just truly amazing, particularly because the leak that they are allegedly going after has already occurred. So what the benefit is of getting this broad of information from five reporters and editors is just beyond belief.
So again, a little bit on the timeline here. This dates back to, there was an Associated Press article in May, and the Justice Department started looking into phone records from April of May of last year, 2012. We just found out about this yesterday because the Justice Department alerted the Associated Press on Friday, and then a public letter from the Associated Press came out yesterday. So you mentioned that this deviated from any kind of protocol that, in terms of what's required in terms of subpoena, in terms of the personal approval of Attorney General Eric Holder. Do we know that Attorney General Eric Holder, whether he signed off on this?
I have no idea whether the Attorney General signed off on it or not, but it would be hard to imagine that he would have signed off on this in light of the fact that all of the requirements of the Justice Department's own rules appear not to have been followed.
And the reaction from not only the Newspaper Association, the Associated Press, from the RTNDA, which oversees broadcast journalism, has been swift and very strong. What are your concerns about what this means in terms of news gathering?
Well, You know, we at the NAA and a number of other similar organizations have been advocating for a federal shield law for reporters that would have prevented this kind of abuse by the Justice Department. And that act actually passed the House twice. It passed the Senate Judiciary Committee, and then it languished in the Senate before the upcoming elections. But it's really time to revisit that. These kinds of shield rules would not prevent the department or any element of law enforcement from gaining important information in the war against terror, but it would guarantee that journalists have a fair opportunity to oppose subpoenas, and would narrow the government's ambit so they don't become a fishing expedition, which is certainly what this one really feels like.
You mentioned it has to do with subpoenas, but what was the subpoena in this particular case?
Well, in this case, as I understand it, the Justice Department subpoenaed the phone companies, but without any notice to the Associated Press. So in most cases, there are rules that require for subpoenas of news media that you have a narrow scope, you have an opportunity to go back and forth, the Justice Department would show that they had looked at alternatives for seeking this kinds of information. But if you can imagine getting 2 months of five reporters, all of their phone records for news gathering that certainly wasn't all involved with this case, a leak that had already occurred, it's just mind-boggling.
And those phone records include, you know, calls received, who calls went out to, not just from the individual personal phone numbers of reporters, but also some of the main phone lines for Hartford, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., and New York for the AP's offices. I mean, that's the AP alluded to not only source protection, but also demonstrated that could reveal their news gathering style, what they do. I mean, is this, you said a fishing expedition. I mean, how do you even begin to sort through that amount of information?
That's why it feels like a fishing expedition, because it is just so incredibly broad. I mean, news organizations understand the need for a balance between, you know, the public's interest in the free dissemination of ideas and information and effective law enforcement. And that's exactly what these Justice Department rules were attempting or were supposed to be doing. And the fact that they appear not to be followed at all just screams for legislation on a federal shield law that would, frankly, enforce the kinds of rules that we're talking about.
So in this, if this has to do with the story that the Associated Press reported about the foiled terrorist attack in Yemen, doesn't the government have an interest in sorting out where that source came from? I mean, if it reveals that peace came out, there were negotiations with Obama administration officials, the Associated Press says, before that piece went to publication. But potentially, because that piece came out, whoever was collecting that intelligence in Yemen could be put at risk. It could jeopardize our intelligence gathering. Doesn't the government have an interest in finding out who was the source?
Well, first of all, this leak already occurred. So I think that the national security issues are diminished. Nonetheless, there's no question that the government has an interest, and we all as citizens of the United States have an interest in the war against terror. But going after 2 months' worth of phone messages and phone contact information and whatnot, which would cover a much broader scope of anything these people were working on for 2 months, is much broader. So I don't know how, you know, national security interests are served by not even issuing a subpoena or negotiating one with the Associated Press. In most cases, and these kinds of things happen all the time, and the press negotiates with the government as to what information is necessary for the government to enact law enforcement. But it appears that none of that was followed here. I mean, this was a complete surprise, as I understand it, until the general counsel of the Associated Press found out about this a year later on Friday.
You've mentioned the Shield Law in Congress, pending legislation in Congress, but I also want to ask you about the Obama administration's sort of positioning and how they've gone after alleged leakers. They've brought cases against six alleged leakers, which is twice the number under all previous presidents combined. What do you think the Obama administration is? Why do you see them as being more aggressive than previous administrations?
There's no question they have been more aggressive. And look, we live in a very different time than we did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But nonetheless, we have to maintain the balances between, the First Amendment rights of news media and the public interest in reporting on all matters on all manner of government conduct. And I think that's what lies at the heart of this case, and those are really critical balances.
Yesterday, Jay Carney, White House spokesman, said the White House was not involved with this Justice Department investigation. I wonder if have you gotten any kind of response from the Obama administration after raising alarms about the size and scope of this search of AP records?
No, we have not. But, again, this has just been unfolding in the last 24 hours.
Okay. And what do you want to hear back from the Obama administration?
Well, I think we'd like to hear a number of things. We'd like to see that the telephone toll records obtained and be all destroyed as requested by the AP. If they're not returned, they should at the very least be segregated. More importantly, I think the Justice Department and the administration should explain how the government lawyers overreached so egregiously in this matter and describe what the department will do to mitigate the impact of these actions. And I think they need to publicly disclose more information on who has had access to the records, what protections were taken to ensure the information unrelated to a specific criminal investigation was not utilized by anyone.
Do you think this is going to scare off potential sources for journalists?
Well, all of this has the impact of doing that. And that's, that really limits the public's right to know.
So it sounds like not only you sort of have a standing call for a sheer law to protect journalists, but in this particular case, you're finding it even more egregious and outrageous because of the scope, because of the size, and because it's not clear how it was approved.
And we have been assured as members of, members of the press that the government, the Justice Department, specific rules about subpoenas for the news media for testimony and evidence will be followed by the Justice Department for very specific rules. And the argument goes, so we don't need a shield law because the Justice Department will follow its own rules. And in this case, it appears that they were not at all.
And finally, do you know of any precedents where that subpoena protocol was not followed in a similar manner?
I don't know. And, sad part is we don't always know. and that's why it's so critical. I mean, this just seems so egregious. I couldn't have said to you last week, given you a situation, and this occurred a year ago. And, no one knew until until the Associated Press found out on Friday.
All right. Caroline Little, the CEO and president of the Newspaper Association of America, helping us understand this news about AP phone records being collected by the Justice Department. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming up, we talk to architect Danielle Libeskind about the spire at the top of One World Trade Center.